You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Cyber conflict flares in the subcontinent. Australian political parties as well as parliament are subjected to attempted cyber attacks. A new strain of malware is being distributed through messaging apps. Microsoft pulls cryptojacking Windows 10 apps from its store. Britain's NCSC is rumored to have concluded that it can mitigate Huawei risks. Facebook gets a harsh report from Westminster. And a hacker claims a higher motive for his breach, but still wants Bitcoin. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, February 19th, 2019. The website of Pakistan's foreign ministry was rendered inaccessible over the weekend, probably by a denial-of-service attack. Speculation regards the attack as probably originating from India. Last week's terrorist massacre of 30 Indian security personnel in the suicide bombing of a convoy moving through Jammu and Kashmir's Pulwama district may have prompted the cyber attack. A Pakistani terrorist group claimed responsibility for the bombing. It's worth noting that low-level cyber conflict between India and Pakistan has persisted for years, and that many of the actors on both sides have been patriotic hacktivists, not necessarily operating under state direction. Australian Prime Minister Morrison said yesterday that three political parties, Liberal, Labour, and National, have been targeted by sophisticated foreign actors. The attempts came to light during investigation of attempts on parliament systems. Chinese intelligence services are the leading suspects, according to reports in the Sydney Morning Herald and elsewhere. China's foreign ministry denies any involvement and says reports of Chinese attacks are both baseless and irresponsible and are likely to poison possibilities of future harmonious cooperation between China and Australia. Security firm Avast reports a new malware family, Reetspoof, spreading through instant messages. Reetspoof, which Avast says is now being updated daily, combines various file formats in multi-stage attacks that give it unusual versatility. The attack is delivered through such instant messaging clients as Skype or Live Messenger, where what Avast calls a highly obfuscated Visual Basic script carries a hard-coded, encrypted CAB file. That file is expanded into a digitally signed executable, which in turn installs a downloader. Avast says research is in its early stage and that little is known about the attacker's methods or motives, still less their identity, but Reetspoof looks like a malware family that bears watching. We often hear stories of how unauthorized access to an organization begins with a simple phishing email, and many organizations have implemented combinations of technical solutions and training to prevent outsiders from gaining access. Egal Goffman is head of security research at XM Cyber, and his team has been tracking infiltration techniques that begin with access to a low-level user's machine within an organization, and it pivots from there.
Let's say somebody malicious out there was able to gain full access to user machine located in the corporate headquarter. And the adversary main goal is stealing, let's say, some kind of credit card information from a database server located at some remote location. And however, the database network is isolated from the user headquarter network, and it's not easy accessible from regular users. So the headquarter network and the database network are completely isolated, and there is no user from the headquarter is not able to log in to the database network. Because the adversary has full system access, he can easily locate the user mail application, and he can hijack all email sessions and messages and inject, let's say, a malicious URL or document with some kind of a macro inside the document and to trick the user to click on this document or URL. So basically, the adversary hijacked mail correspondence, a real mail correspondence, and he's not faking anything. And this is the strong side of this attack. This way, instead of targeting user outside the organization by sending, you know, phishing emails, the adversary can manipulate real correspondence between a compromised user and the target user. So in our example, let's say the target user is one of the IT personals. We can easily trick the IT person to click on an injected URL or document. He will not suspect that anything is wrong and open this URL or document. And this action will direct, for example, the user account of this IT personnel to some internal watering hole website, exposing his high privilege credentials and, of course, bypassing many of the link detection and application control mechanisms. Now, at this stage, the adversary has a high privilege user account. He can use this account to connect to some kind of a jump host or some kind of a privilege access workstation. This is a Microsoft term for a jump host. And from there, he can obviously access the isolated databases. And basically, this is a game over. Once he were able to gain himself a high privilege user account, he can pivot the network. Basically, that's the game over and the target was achieved. So an effective solution and affecting email messaging defense mechanism will include some kind of a malware sandboxing. All messages and attachment transported through the organization mail server, let's say for example, Exchange server, should be scanned for malware, viruses, and spyware. And if malware is detected, the messages should be quarantined or deleted.
That's Igal Goffman from XM Cyber. Following Symantec's discovery that the apps were installing Monero cryptojackers in users' devices, Microsoft pulled 8 Windows 10 applications from its store. The unwanted apps included Fast Searchlight, Battery Optimizer, VPN Browser Plus, Downloader for YouTube Videos, Clean Master Plus, FastTube, Findu Browser 2019, and Findu Mobile and Desktop Search. Symantec says that the applications were nominally produced by 3 developers, but that evidence in the source code and adjacent domains suggest to them that in fact all 8 apps are the work of 1 developer or group of developers. Reports in The Telegraph and elsewhere suggest that a report on Huawei's security issue and the company's suitability for participation in 5G networks from the UK's National Cybersecurity Center will be very far from the harsh condemnation that had been widely suspected. The NCSC is believed to have concluded that the risks Huawei poses are manageable and that GCHQ sees its way clear to mitigating them. On Friday, MI6 head Alex Younger said he wanted a proper conversation over giving Huawei a role in 5G networks, but the specific concerns he expressed concentrated on the dangers a monopoly would present. So Huawei is not out of the woods by a long shot, but if the rumors about the NCSC's report are borne out, that will be good news indeed for the company. Facebook has not fared as well in Westminster. The Digital Culture, Media, and Sport Committee has published its final report on disinformation and fake news, and Facebook figures prominently, both in terms of content moderation and data handling. The report says in its summary, quote, Facebook intentionally and knowingly violated both data privacy and anti-competition laws, end quote. The report recommends that tech companies be given a compulsory code of ethics to be overseen by an independent regulator who could take legal action against companies it found in violation of the code. It also recommends that social networks be required to remove known sources of harmful content, including proven sources of disinformation. For its part, Facebook says it would welcome helpful regulation. It's also mooting the idea of setting up its own tribunal, a kind of 40-person Supreme Court that would adjudicate disputes over whether content was being unfairly judged in violation of the social network's terms of service. The black market is, as many have noted after all, a market. It follows familiar laws of supply and demand. As supply of any commodity rises, prices drop, and it seems clear that user information is now a relatively low-priced commodity. At the end of last week, Gnostic Players released his 3rd tranche of PII, mostly user credentials, taken from 8 databases Gnostic Players claims to have hacked. He's asking just over 2.62 Bitcoin for the almost 93 million users' data, We note that ZDNet, which has been in touch with someone credibly claiming to be Gnostic players, is treating him as a singular he. At any rate, that's about $14,500. Gnostic Players, who trades in the Dream Market, had earlier offered 16 databases with 620 million users' data, and another batch of 8 databases containing 127 million users' information. 2.62 Bitcoin doesn't seem like much for 93 million users' data, but money isn't the sole object. Gnostic Players told ZDNet that his goal is twofold. He wants, first of all, to sell a billion records and then go hide out in some degree of comfort. It seems, at the rates he's charging, that such comfort may be more squalid than luxurious. Cozy, no doubt, but frosty and frayed around the edges. Second of all, Gnostic Players wants to contribute to the downfall of American pigs. A manifesto that accompanies his offerings suggests why he's got it in for the Americans, who are, we think, generally a lovable crowd, although we admit that we can be something of an acquired taste. Mr. Players is offering support for a convicted Apophis Squad hacker. George Duke Cohen is a young and talented boy, Mr. Players writes. Instead of giving him a chance, the UK government sends him to prison for 3 years. And not only that, after he's through with 3 years' detention at Her Majesty's pleasure, the Americans are lined up to take a whack at him, as we noted in a discussion of his indictment last week. The U.S. charges could get Mr. Duke Cohen a further 63 years in Club Fed. That's a high-end estimate of his sentence, but still, it is, after all, a long time. So bad on Her Majesty's government, says Mr. Players. May this upcoming release of dumps serve as a reminder, he writes. When countries claim to respect their citizens, they have duty protect them. Anywho, Mr. Players thinks this is unfair. If he is not given a fair justice during the upcoming days, weeks, years, more data will be released. We note that Gnostic Players is selling, not dumping the data he's ripped off. So let justice be done, or more data be sold, at least until Mr. Players makes enough altcoin to retire to wherever he wants to go, because, after all, political altruism has its limits, and those limits are probably somewhere south of $14,500. That much change will get you a nice commercial cleaning franchise in some markets, although admittedly that's probably more conventional work and social utility than it's fair to expect from a hacker of Mr. Player's mad skills. Is it us, or does Mr. Player's diction sound kind of shadow brokerish? Not, of course, that he's a shadow broker, but where have these guys been these days anyway? Wealthy Elites has been missing you at the Davos.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute. He's also my co-host on the Hacking Humans podcast. Joe, it's great to have you back.
It's great to be back, Dave.
We've got an article here from the Naked Security blog over at Sophos. Mm-hmm. This is written by Paul Ducklin, friend of the show.
Yep.
And the title is Apple Fighting Pirate App Developers Will Insist on Two-Factor Authentication for Coders.
Right.
What's going on here?
Okay, so Apple has this this program called the Enterprise Certificate Program,
right?
Which is a way that allows, let's say you wanted to develop an app specifically for the CyberWire.
Okay.
But you didn't want to put it into the App Store and you didn't want to wait for Apple to approve it, and you wanted it to do a little bit more nosing around the phone for security purposes of your company data, right?
So this is an internal use
internal app use only
for CyberWire employees.
Correct.
Let's say. Okay.
Now, Facebook and Google were recently chastised for abusing this program by distributing apps to other people,
right,
outside of the company, that Apple said, well, this doesn't amount to an employee, but they were doing a lot of, I like the way this article puts it. This article describes the app as way too snoopy.
Right.
Or you know, just too snoopy for the App Store. So they use their enterprise certificate, and Apple, you know, essentially grabbed Facebook and Google by the necks and shook vigorously and said, this will not be the case. You will not be abusing this.
Right.
Right. So it turns out that this program can be used to develop rogue apps. It's essentially the closest thing that Apple has to the Android equivalent, which is allow apps from other sources.
Right. To sideload apps.
Yeah. Sideload apps and, yep, or for developer options. Right.
Okay.
But in order for me to do that, I still have to have a certificate with Apple so that Apple can at some point in time in the future revoke that certificate like they did for a day with Facebook and Google, mm-hmm, and make the app not work.
Okay.
So if I know your password to your enterprise certificate.
I'm developing for CyberWire.
Right.
Somehow you compromise my credentials.
Correct.
Okay.
And I go out and I generate an app that is malicious and then sign it with your enterprise certificate.
Oh, I see.
Then I can distribute it, and it will come up as a valid app,
mm-hmm,
right? So what Apple is going to start doing is requiring two-factor authentication so that particular abuse case can't take place anymore. So now when I try to go sign the app with your certificate, you'll get a message on your phone that says, here's your code, and I don't get that message.
I see. Right. Okay. Well, this seems non-controversial to me, but there are some folks who aren't very happy about it.
The article goes on to talk about a couple of recent cases that are not necessarily from the developer community. The article talks about an attorney who's suing Apple with a class action lawsuit, saying that he and millions of other people have been economically damaged by two-factor authentication. I think the crux of his lawsuit, if I remember,
what is his hourly rate? If
no,
if the two-factor is an economic loss, but go on.
He said it was taking 5 minutes for every time he needed to use two-factor, which is a ridiculous amount of time.
That, okay,
I find it incredibly difficult to believe that it never takes 5 minutes.
Yeah, okay,
if you're security conscious and minded, you should always ask if two-factor authentication is available, and if it isn't, maybe you should reconsider using that product or service.
Right. Well, yes, I think that's an excellent point I would make the argument that should be part of your buying decision.
Yeah.
Is two-factor available with your product?
Right.
If it's something that's important to you.
Again, Dave, we're dealing with a huge education problem for the general populace. You ask people who don't live and breathe this stuff every day what a two-factor authentication is, I'll bet you get 50% of the people who've never even heard of it.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, I would say I'm on Team Apple with this one.
Yeah, I am too.
I think it's probably for the best in the long run. And why not? Certainly, developers have some privileges that other folks don't when it comes to potentially putting dangerous stuff out there.
Especially for developers.
Yeah.
They should absolutely require developers to use two-factor authentication. Yeah. I think this is a no-brainer. The general populace, the user community, not using two-factor authentication. I
have more sympathy for that. It pains you to say it, doesn't it?
I at least understand there's a difference between the two populations.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. That's as far as we'll get you. All right. Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Dave.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now, a word from our sponsor, SixthSense. SixthSense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With SixthSense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose SixthSense, visit SixthSense.com.